This is a download from BFM 89.9. The Business Station.
Good afternoon. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Juliet Jacobs. The following is a recording of an interview conducted by Lim Soon Heng as part of the series On the Theatre.
This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Lim Soon Heng with Joe Kukitas and Zalvin Fuzi, theatre practitioners. Being the third Friday of the month, we have, as part of the series on engaging theatre, a discussion on the director. In the first of the series, we talked about theatre as the empty space upon which action takes place. Then that discussion was followed by one on what is story. And the third in the series focused on the actor, the performer. Today, our attention on the person who seems to be the all-powerful, all-controlling person. The Wizard of Oz. By the way, do you today think of the director as the powerful person that controls the production?
I don't see that in a negative light or a negative space. I think there's different kinds of directors, and maybe some may want to control every element very precisely and very clearly because that's their vision of the play. But within that playground that the director creates, you kind of get to understand how that director operates, how that director works, and you can decide whether to be in that playground with them or not. So I've admired the work of very diverse kinds of directors, some of whom, you know, have an incredible precision. Actually, all great directors have incredible precision. What am I talking about? All great directors have incredible precision. But a great performer will know how to work within that playground that the director creates.
Well, I think, you know, a director's job is really a chief collaborator, and to be able to collaborate with not only his or her artistic team from set design, lighting design, music, costume, and also dealing with actors to tell a story. I think the job is really to make sure that the vision of the story is told as effectively as possible. So in that way, they're kind of leading the whole team.
Has such a person always been a part of the theatre practice?
No, the director is a relatively new thing. It's only a few hundred years old, really. And you still find this in many parts of the world with traditional theatre. It's a performer, creator, who is the person who is driving the work. It's the artist, really. And I think later, at a certain point, I think, what, 18th century would have been?
It's kind of formalised.
As a role.
Yeah, it's quite a new concept, actually.
Actually, was a concept of the stage manager. The stage manager was the one who just manages, as Zalfian says, manages all these people. And then that idea of the stage manager then was transformed to the idea of the person who's sort of directing the action and directing the people in the space.
What led to this kind of change of this person's role?
Perhaps as things grew bigger, and as this is a Western, in the West, of course, a necessity arose for that kind of thing. And, you know, and I think art is so evolutionary. Things evolve, artists evolve, and then maybe particular stage managers would feel very strongly that they needed to create something in a particular way. And maybe there have always been directors who have been more visionary, perhaps, than the rest of the company. And perhaps that is what created the sort of auteur director in theatre as well.
The auteur director is the one that is responsible for everything in terms of the vision.
No, when I say the auteur director, I mean like some directors have a very clear aesthetic vision, a very clear practical vision for what the theatre means. So the great directors such as, you know, Eugenio Barba or Robert Wilson or Castoff, you know, so all these are people who aren't just trying to direct the action. They're trying to understand the process of making art. So they're artists. They're responding to their society. They're setting a particular philosophy in their theatre. They're getting other people to engage with their society and with thinking about art. So I think on that level, they are philosophers. They are people interested in the larger questions.
It's adding another layer to the text, really, as a storyteller. And by using not just, you know, the text that's in a script to tell a story, they're pulling in all the different elements of a show. So the creative elements, like what I said before, the creative elements of costume and set and lights and production design, and nowadays with projection and visual, you know, effects that you can do. So it's really about pulling all together different artistic elements to put another layer in terms of telling the story.
But not all directors necessarily want to tell a story. I mean, there are many kinds of directors who are anti-story or who are trying to create a provocation for the audience.
Yes.
And like one of my favorite directors is Robert Wilson. And while he often works with texts which are story-based, one of the things he said was, you know, a lot of the time people ask, I'm sure Zafian gets this question a lot as well, I do, what's your message? And I really dislike this question because I think if you can reduce it to a couple of sentences, then
why do it?
Why do it? And Robert Wilson once said, I do not have a message. What I do is architectural arrangement. And I love Robert Wilson's work because of the architectural arrangement, and he's a person who plays with time and space, which for me is essentially what theatre is. Theatre is for us to reconsider time and space. It gives us space for meditation, for thinking, for trying to achieve some sort of transcendence in our own minds.
Now, Joy, earlier you said that in traditional theatres, it's the person who conceived the idea, the artist performer who arranges the other actors to come up with the production. In today's context, are plays very much driven by a director finding a play that he likes and then be the initiator rather than coming out of performers?
Not necessarily. No? I mean, if I think about, for example, the origins of Instant Cafe, we were a collective. There were four directors of the company. Not everybody had directing sensibilities, but there were people within the collective who had strong opinions. So we wrote things collectively, we directed things quite collectively, we came to agreements or understandings collectively. And collectively doesn't necessarily mean that everybody always agrees, but it's like, you know what, we think that this is a good way to approach this. And of course, after a while, they became obvious that some people were not interested in that and some people were more interested in that. So then they worked as in collaboratively to create those things. But I think it always is a process of collaboration, of working with somebody else, always. I think even if you have an idea that theatres has a hierarchical structure, I actually don't believe theatre should have a hierarchical structure. I think theatre and theatre making is about democracy and about creating a democratic space. But people have roles. So the role of the director is just one such role.
Is he then the first among equals?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, yes. Of course, yeah.
Mm. I mean, somebody has to kind of final, okay, look, let's put the full stop here because we need to move on. Otherwise, you can just, you know, if sometimes in some collectives, they kind of go on endlessly trying to process things and can't move forward. So in that way, it's useful to have that person who says, okay, I think that's good enough. Yeah. And often a director will say, okay, that's good, let's move on. Even they don't feel it is quite good enough yet. I mean, we direct and often you have to make a decision to say, okay, this is good enough for now. And that's why when you direct a play and you watch it, you can feel, okay, it's finished now, but you always know it's never really finished. The job is never really finished. There's always something else that you would like to do.
I mean, one of the key jobs of a director is to be that third eye. You have to, you know, imagine yourself as the audience looking at it, you know, objectively and imagining it as if you're watching it for the very first time. So the director's job is really to be able to kind of step outside that process and kind of be, you know, looking at it as if they're looking at it as the first time as an audience member, to be able to see whether or not the message or the story or the mood or the experience is coming across as effectively as possible.
Mm. Has the role become quite defined, or is the role still quite nebulous?
I think there are as many different types of directors as there are different types of writers or different kinds of actors. So I don't think there's one kind of director or another kind of director. There's so many different kinds of director. I mean, which is why I bring up the example of Robert Wilson, whose visual aesthetic and whose idea and his principles of making theatre very specific to him and his outlook and the kind of theatre he wants to make to shift time. And he comes from New York, so I can understand that would have been very important in New York, because everything is very fast-paced. And sometimes people accuse him of doing things in slow motion. And he always says, no, I don't do things in slow motion. I do things in real time. Other people have a speeded-up version of life. But his version is to allow us to actually see everything. And I remember watching this show in Japan many years ago as well, which was really, again, had a beautiful stillness and slowness to it. And the director, when I spoke to him, he said to me, you know, if in theatre we're supposed to change perception, change time and space, Tokyo is so fast-paced that I think by slowing time down inside this room, we actually have a theatrical experience. And theatricality does not always mean faster, louder, brighter. Sometimes theatricality can be the opposite. So yeah. I think there's so many different kinds of directors, and I there's certain kind of directors that maybe appeal to you, may not appeal to me.
And different styles.
Yeah.
Different styles, different concepts, different type of ways of, you know, exploring work, I think. And it's just talking about the collaborative process, going back to that, you know, you were talking about, you know, does a director often just choose the text and then start casting it? Mm. It can be that way. That's one conventional way, but it can also be a devised work where they're working collaboratively with actors, or it could be even sometimes works that are made up by actors and then they go looking for a director once they have work. Mm. And then, you know, they dramaturg through that and workshop that process until they have a final piece of work. So there are many ways of working. I think there's no one particular way of how a director would work with a group of actors. It all really depends.
I mean, if you look at some of the great classics over the years and how directors have worked on them, right? So even, let's say, for example, Ibsen's Dollhouse. So, you know, famously when the Doll's House was first performed, you know, it ends with Nora leaving her husband. Shock, horror, you know, people don't leave their husbands in that century, that time, yeah. during that time. Yeah. So it was a real shock. And there was one particular German director who then decided he should change the ending, because he felt German audiences would be too upset to see this. And of course, Ibsen was very upset when he saw this, because it completely changes the whole meaning and purpose of his play. So, you know, there are many different kinds of directors, some who we may feel are completely got hold of the wrong end of the stick, but who make a very strong interpretation of something. But I saw a version of A Doll's House by a German director, Thomas Ostermeyer, who's a very interesting director. I saw a production of his maybe about 5 or 6 years ago. And again, because he wants to make it contemporary, we want to always speak for our time. So in this case, for a woman to leave her husband, modern-day Germany, not so radical. So, but of course, it is about the fact that women, as much as we feel that feminist movement has moved forward, or as much as we feel that there is, you know, but his play, I don't think his play is a feminist play as such, but more of an existential play. What is it to be human? What is it to have your own sense of self, not subjugated by, you know, children, husband, society? So at the end of the play, she doesn't just walk out. She shoots him. She shoots him dead. He falls into this fish tank. In fact, the whole house is made of glass. And inside this glass house, there's a fish tank with live fish swimming around in it. And when she shoots him, and he falls into this fish tank and he drowns. So it's quite a spectacular ending. And then the entire house flips around. And this beautiful glass house, then you see this very bleak horizon. And it's in the middle of winter and she's standing outside on the tinder blocks. And then you suddenly realize, actually, yeah, things haven't changed that much. That still that sense of, you know, that you feel imprisoned by your environment, imprisoned by your surroundings, that you feel the only way to escape is to do something that dramatic. And then what's the future in front of you? It's terrifying, but necessary.
It was called A Doll's House, yes. And it was still credited to Ibsen.
Yeah, the text was exactly the same. So that in the act of leaving, she says to him, I'm leaving.
But she shoots him.
That's all. So the action may have changed, but the text remains the same. Mm. And I thought it was actually a very good way to rethink this play for contemporary times.
Yeah, which kind of begs the game near the question asked, what is the role of the director? Some would say that's a rewriting, like the first one that you mentioned where she is not going to leave the husband.
Well, I don't think you see that. I think the first one wasn't a rewriting. I think the first one was a rewriting because this is not the intention of the playwright. Yeah. The intention of the playwright was to have the woman leave because the woman says, or the human being says, who am I? What is myself? And so I think that first director did not understand that. He just wanted to make the audience comfortable and safe. But in fact, Ibsen was trying to make the audience uncomfortable and unsafe. But I think Thomas Ostermeyer, by having Nora shoot her husband and him falling into a fish tank and drowning, made the audience very uncomfortable and very unsafe. So I think in that way, he was very true to what Ibsen was trying to do in his play.
I think respect for the playwright, I think, is really important, especially when you're working with great classics and understanding what the intention of the playwright is. And how you interpret that, of course, is entirely up to you. But I think if you can stay true to what the playwright's intention was and find new ways to explore that, then I think that's really interesting.
At the same time, I think there are many great directors who deliberately take those classics in order to find some provocation for their society. So if you think of someone like Frank Castorf from Berlin, until recently at the Vox Bühne, when he first appeared on the scene, he was really trying to do some quite radical things. He had this desire, because he was from East Germany, where there's, you know, there wasn't a lot of freedom. And so for him, it was a freedom to imagine. So he did things deliberately that was unimaginable, because he was trying to have this idea that in East Germany, even though we're, you know, the Stasi is all around us and we're not allowed to do so many things, by his having such radical reimaginings, it actually sent a very powerful reaction through East German society that, wow, we can imagine and reimagine things in this very radical way. So in this way, it opens up the way of our thinking. I think that's also the purpose of theatre. It's not just to put on a play in a barn, as I always say. Mm. The idea, the purpose of theatre is actually quite radical. It's to make us reimagine, make us reinvent, make us think we can do things which we're told we can't do. So I think in that way, Frank Castorf, I mean, his first production of Othello was done in the half dark. And all you heard were people muttering in corners. And it really upset the Stasi a lot because they knew something subversive was going on. They couldn't quite put their finger on it.
You are listening to a conversation on the theatre, in particular, the director, with Lim Soon Heng speaking to Joe Kukatas and Zalfian Fuzi, who are both theatre practitioners. Coming up, more on this director and this person's relationship and responsibilities to the actor-performer who is on the stage. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture, BFM 89.9. Good afternoon. You are tuned to Front Row on The Bigger Picture, and I'm Julia Jacobs. Earlier this week, Lim Soon Heng spoke on the topic of the director to Joe Kukatas and Zalfian Fuzi, two theatre practitioners.
No, so far we've been talking about the director as being quite responsible to the audience in terms of trying to provide a different way of experiencing life. What is the director's responsibility to the actor? I'm asking this question because when the kind of comment that we hear is that when a play is great, everybody applauds the actors. When the play is bad, the blame falls at the feet of the director.
So what was your question?
So the question is the relationship between the director and the actor.
Well, there isn't one. Yeah, is there, Zalfian?
There isn't. I mean, it's a... Again, I think it's director's job is to help the actor in the creative process.
So it's not the director who is molding the actor to be that part?
Well, I think so. No, I mean, of course, they have to help mold the actor, whether it's, you know, getting into character or helping them with, you know, understanding the scene or understanding what is the objective of, you know, that particular play, for instance, understanding relationships between their fellow actors and their characters and their physicality and their voice, you know. So all these tools that you have as an actor, you know, it's the director's job through the rehearsal process to help them achieve the ultimate goal. And in this case, the director's goal is to put on a show in however way that has been envisioned. So I do hear that comment a lot. When the actor does really well, you know, they get all the credit, but when a play is really bad, then, you know, the director gets all the blame, right? But, you know, ultimately...
Well, if it's like a prime minister, then, you know, first amongst equals, well, that's the buck must stop somewhere.
Yeah. But, I mean, the relationship between the actor and director is an important one. I mean, it's the key relationship because even if you take away a lot of the different, you know, elements in a show and a production, and you have, like, when we go back to what the first show we said, the empty space, which is just a performer on stage, an empty space, that relationship between the actor and the audience is key, right, to be able to tell that story. So having a good relationship that is actually assisting and nurturing and helping the actor in whatever way to tell that story, I think is really, really important.
At the same time, I would say that not all directors feel that that is their job. And neither should they be forced to feel that is their job. Some directors have say very clearly, I'm not your acting coach. They will choose actors who have enough craft, who have enough experience to go further than what they think they can do, because the director says, I want to create this kind of work. And so again, a good actor has to also understand the vocabulary of that director, bring something of their own into it. But, you know, you'd work differently with one director than you'd work with a different director. Like, I recently did a production with Natalie Hennedigi from Cake Theatre, and her work is very, very different. And so when I work with her, I have to be physically much more adept, much more fit. It's like running a marathon. You need to have a certain degree of physical strength.
Stamina,
yes, in order to do her work. And because her work has that kind of vocabulary, you can't go into her production and act with her as if you're acting with another director, because she has a different vocabulary. And once you see enough of her plays, you think, okay, I know what I need to do here. Of course, sometimes as an actor, you still have to figure out a lot. And nobody's going to baby you along.
Yeah.
You need to work yourself to understand a lot of things. And the director can help you in some ways, but on some levels, you're on your own, baby.
Yeah.
Since you are both actors also, and both of you also direct, do actors have to choose their directors? So in other words, when you're asked to perform with a group of people and you have this director, do you have to think about, can I work with this director?
Oh, of course. I mean, you only want to work with directors you want to work with.
Yeah.
I think that's quite, for me, kind of obvious. Of course, I think as a young actor, you should work with as many directors as possible, because you learn a lot from different kinds of directors. So I think I'd always say to young actors, just go forth and, you know, be in a production and learn.
And a lot of different directors have different methods, a lot of different styles, a lot of different ways of working, different types of exercises that they can do. So I think as a young actor, it'd be very good for you to experience working with different directors all the time.
Because I remember something that you performed, if I'm not mistaken, it was in commemoration of Christian. You were talking about a rehearsal that you had with him, that he made you run and then say one word.
Oh, not run, no. He took the script away from me on the first day and wouldn't let me have it back. And then in rehearsal, he'd only give me one word at a time, and he wouldn't let me go and say the next word until I had said the first word properly. Sometimes, and it took hours and hours. I think by the end of the first day, we'd done the first couple of sentences. But I also think, like with Christian, I mean, he was also trying to figure things out as himself as a director. You know, he was also somebody who learnt about directing by directing. And in KL, most of us are not trained actors, so we were learning about acting by acting. His direction was very process-oriented. But he told me years later, he said, you know, nowadays I only like to work with actors who know what they're doing. Because he said he felt he'd done enough work to have that kind of nurturing director style or coaching director style, you know, that he wanted to just work with an actor. He'd tell them, this is what we're trying to do, and then let the actor also bring as much into it as he wanted from them. And then together can find out more. I mean, recently a young actor who wants to start directing, we had a chat because he said to me, I want to talk to you about, you know, surely a director should do this, he said. Surely a director should do that. Surely a director should do the other. And I said, the director is as fallible as any artist. Just as you as a young actor can go into a rehearsal process and you're trying to discover something and you're going to fail a lot, the director is also capable of failing in their process of discovery. That in the rehearsal room, they are also trying to find something. They're trying to find the possibility of something. And if they are lucky and if they have a good team that they're working with and things that conditions are right, they will get closer to that possibility. As all of us, even as actors, never feel satisfied with their performance, but they feel if they get within spitting distance of the possibility of that character that they try to inhabit, they're happy. And a director, too, is trying to find the greatest possibility of every piece of work that they make. So I said to him, you don't need to know everything, but you need to know that there's more out there than you think. I mean, I think, and this is why I come back to the idea of transcendence, why I brought up Eugenia Barbara earlier. I mean, he's not the only one who thinks in this way, but, you know, he talks about the act of making theatre as tiptoeing and looking over a wall, because you know there's something on the other side of the wall. Or about an early experience he had when he was a roof cleaner and working with this older man. And his job was to stay inside the skylight with a length of rope. And the older man who's cleaning the gutters of the roof is suspended from that rope. And he has to hold onto that rope. He's not the one doing the actual cleaning, right? But he is holding in suspension this other man who's dangling. And it's precarious and it's terrifying. But you have to trust each other and then it can get done. So he, in a way, is... The director is the person holding the rope. The actor is dangling over the precipice. But both people are important in the process.
That's dramatic.
Yeah, yeah, it is. I think it's a wonderful analogy to describe the relationship and also the amount of responsibility that sits on both sides.
Mm-hmm. Mm. Yeah, and it was interesting in that dynamic because at that point, Barba was a very young man and the man who was cleaning the gutters was a much older man. And sometimes I think young directors feel, oh, well, I don't know enough to work with an older established actor. But in fact, the older established actor will give you much more trust to you because the older established actor has done enough to trust that you just hold on to that rope, my boy, and I'll be okay. I can do my job. And then you learn a lot about trust as well as a young director. So I always feel and want to say to young actors, don't be afraid to work with older established actors in order to learn your craft.
And I've also heard stories told in the context of young directors and older actors where a director is telling the older actor, say, okay, now you move here, now you move there. And in the end, the older actor say, you direct and let me act.
Yeah. Okay. No, I've heard stories like that. I mean, I think it's about creating a process whereby allowing the actor to find themselves in their element. So older actors naturally will be able to find where their blocking is, you know?
Yeah.
So they don't really need to be told, because a good actor will be able to understand the text, understand the scene, and naturally they will find their position.
The reason.
Yeah, in the space, as opposed to a director preempting the blocking and saying, okay, I want you here at this specific line, and then over there when you go, you say this line, So that's very much hands-on directing, right? It's almost like giving a line reading where you're actually saying, I want you to say this line shocked or crying or angry, right? Actors don't like that because they want to be able to find their own process of finding how to say a scene or do a scene, right? Mm. So, yeah, I think older actors will naturally be able to find their own way.
Having been in the industry such a long time, do you have in your mind the kind of ideal director for you?
I think for me, a director who creates a space where I can feel creative. And it's many different kinds of directors. I've liked working with directors who challenge me a lot. And sometimes, maybe in the process of doing that piece of work, I will think, why am I acting? I never want to act again. And because you could question yourself a lot, you question your abilities a lot. Because
that would seem to suggest that the director has created a space where you don't feel safe. Would that suggest that?
No, they've created a space which is very challenging. Mm. So that's like, go back to my analogy of the playground. There's many different kinds of playgrounds, and some playgrounds are damn scary. and when you're a child and maybe you're not very good at the swings, and you think, no, I can't get on that swing. Look at those kids. They can swing so high. I can never do that. But the director will say, there's a swing. And so you're like, okay, I clamber on that swing. And then eventually you find out, wow, I can swing as high as that other person. And then it feels good. But of course, it can be also terrifying. And you can lose faith in yourself. You can lose trust in other people. Actors go through a whole range of difficult emotions when they are in a rehearsal process. And the loss of faith in themselves is, I think, well, I suffer from this quite frequently. but I always think I have to try to find my way out of that hole. And usually when I'm in that space, I think, why do I want to be an actor? It's such a difficult thing to do. Mm. But then I always have to remember, well, you know what? That director wants me to be in it, so they must see something. And they see some possibility in you. So you think you have to keep having the faith to, it's again the rope analogy.
But I think, directors will put you in situations to challenge you.
Yeah.
To get it out of you. And sometimes the element of danger is a tool, right? So they have to kind of push you and challenge you to get a response from you. And sometimes it's pushing you to your limits in this case that will, where as an actor, you'll discover something new or something that you never thought was possible before.
Yeah. I always remember this one rehearsal I had with this young actress, and we were rehearsing in my house, poor theatre people who don't have rehearsal spaces. and this one particular moment, I knew it was going to be a very highly charged moment for this actress. And so I indicated to the other actors just to kind of leave the space. So they all went to the kitchen. I could hear them kind of clanking around in there. I don't know what they were doing. And in the meantime, she was getting more and more emotionally charged in doing the scene. And we were just doing table work. She was sitting across the table from me. And she started to just weep uncontrollably, right? And so I just sort of discreetly handed her this roll of kitchen towels, right? And the state that she was in, she tore this kitchen roll towel in half, cardboard and all, right? And it was just quite wonderful. Because she was in that very charged state. And she discovered something about her character and she was weeping and powerful. And later when the boys came out, they kind of looked at her and said, you're scary. You're scary. Yeah. I think we'll always remember that particular rehearsal because she went to a place she didn't know she could go to. Very difficult for her, but she also found a particular power and strength through it.
So when we are watching a play, can we tell where the director leaves off and where the actor picks up? To the point that you say, if this thing isn't working, it's not the director's fault, it's the actor's fault. Or if, yeah,
it is
working.
I don't want to get so fixated on whether something is one person's fault or the other. Of course, sometimes you can tell, like I can go and watch a show and think, oh, this is a very cake show. Like I can tell Natalie's direction. You can go watch a Robert Wilson show and you can tell even before soon the lights come on, you can tell it's Robert Wilson because his lighting is very, very particular. Yeah. And of course, you can tell this is Robert Wilson's directing because he likes
There's
things.
There's a certain characteristic style.
A style. Yeah. So, the bodies of the actors are different. They are more elongated. They are more deliberate. One foot is set in front of the other very deliberately. That is the style of his creation. And he says he likes things to be formal. And you can see the formality of it. His favorite painter is Cézanne, which has a kind of certain formality but space within this formal structure. And at the same time, a certain kind of wildness. And I think that's why I like it. It's like, how can this thing be simultaneously wild and formal? Structured and yet completely meditative and transcendent. So it's, you know, it's an interesting thing that you can do as a director. And in this case, you can see, yeah, these actors are very much in his mold. And when he works with the Berliner Ensemble, who also have a very strong performance style, it's quite magic because the two marrying of these two forces can create a third force, which is also very exciting. I mean, I guess because we talked a lot about actors, and I think there's a lot of other elements in theatre. I mean, I think as Zafian said earlier, the director's work is not just with actors. The director's work is a huge part of the director's work is with his other collaborators, composers,
light designers.
Sound designers, light designers, set designers.
Music sound,
stage manager. These are very important relationships to a director as well.
In the end, the director is responsible, or at least he or she is the person who pulls it all together.
Well, not necessarily, because maybe it's the producer. So, you know, because the role of the producer is also very important. So it depends on the kind of producer that you're working with, a producer who is in sync with the director. I mean, I think as a director, I'm always looking for that perfect producer who understands the work that I also want to make, but also challenges the kind of work I want to make, who asks me questions, who pushes me into a corner. And, you know, the creative producer is a wonderful creature because
they allow the director to do what they need to do, really.
And also perhaps they can provide that sound. I mean, you know, because you need people to talk to. So somebody I mean, I've worked with great producers who are the people who have said, why don't you think about doing something like this? You know, how about this direction? And that kind of conversation is very important for a director. You're not just picking a play off the shelf. You're thinking about what's going on. So those sorts of conversations with your collaborators is very important. It's not just you deciding I'm going to do this one thing, but rather to be, I think, an artist is to spend a lot of time talking with your fellow artists, your fellow collaborators about just what's going on right now.
It comes back to context, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So context and resonance, really. So knowing, you know, putting whatever work that you're doing in relation to the context of what's happening today with your society, in context with what's happening in the world. Mm. And, you know, the producer is so key also because they're also the financier or the person responsible for making the work happen financially, right? And producers are good because they're always looking at what audiences are looking for, right? And what would work in terms of that context and that relationship with your audience.
The director also often is looking at that as well in a different way. So, yeah. I mean, going back to the idea of the example of Castorf in Berlin, when in East Germany, after the fall of the wall, the question was, well, why aren't audiences satisfied with just a conventional theatre that's going on in all these big German theatre houses and opera houses? And so to get the decision to then get Frank Castorf to then, you know, be artistic director of the Volksbühne was because there was a kind of understanding that they were losing audiences. Mm. And so young audiences started coming to see his work because his work was sort of so out there. And even the populist audience who were tired of this kind of stale theatre that was being shown in many of the other theatres wanted to go and see, well, what will he do that will bring a breath of life into it? And of course, he then influenced the whole next generation of theatre directors because he said, well, I do things in this particular way. I will, you know, have a play about, I will do The Enemy of the People by Ibsen, and the audience will enter through the toilet as they come into the theatre space, and they'll be listening to the Beatles and rocking onto the Beatles. And of course, the Beatles back then, to play the Beatles in East Germany was a radical thing. You know, it was something that kind of shook up the establishment. It's like the Stasi were like, what? Beatles? No, some Beatles is bad, subversive music. So, you know, all these sorts of things that directors do is to unsettle, provoke, stimulate, engage with their audiences. And they can only do that if they feel that they can have, that they're not alone in thinking this. So that's where their friends who are the producer or their friends who are actors, and they'll say, am I crazy? Do you feel this way? They say, yeah. Okay, then let's carry on. Let's keep going, trying to engage with this idea.
Do you, when you are directing, think of what is my role, or you just do it?
Oh, no, I constantly think about my role. I remember saying this to a young director some years ago as well, when he was telling me about he wanted to do this particular play. And I asked him why he wanted to do this play. And he said, oh, I saw a very good production of it once. And I said, that's not a good enough reason for me. I said, why do you want to do it here? And then I asked him a series of questions, and embedded, layered down through many layers, he admitted why he really wanted to do it. And I said, well, you need to communicate that with your company. I said, they need to know why you want to do this play, why it's necessary for you to do this play, and you need to then excite them about why it's necessary. And he said, but if I tell them this and the public finds out, that might be a problem for this play. So I said, you need to tell your company. Whether the public finds out is not important. Whether you tell it to a reporter is not important. You need to communicate this reason, what it is that's provoking you to feel I need to do this play. Otherwise, it'll just be a play in a barn.
Thank you both very much.
Thank you.
Well, join us again next month when we look into another aspect of the theatre. Not sure what we will look at. And if you have any questions about performances in terms of whether it's in dance, music, or aspects of the visual arts, drop us a line at thebiggerpicture@bfm.my and we'll try our best to give you a satisfactory response. This is Front Row on The Bigger Picture and I'm Lim Soon Heng with theatre practitioners Joe Kukatas and Zalfin Fuzi, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.